Everybody's born. You come into the world. What do you have? You have energy and time. The energy of your heart, mind, soul, and strength to be invested in time. And as you take that energy and you move it through time, you're a force. And that force leaves always awake.
If you're around FCCI for any length of time, you'll quickly realize that Dr. Henry Cloud has been a significant contributing factor to our annual international conferences and subsequently to our business leadership group curriculum. And this message about your wake as a leader is one of his best. I'm Ken Powell, your host for FCCI's Pathway to Purpose podcast. And when I pulled this message out of our archive library, I was reminded again of God's provision for us to be used by the Holy Spirit to dramatically influence change in our businesses and in our society. We often talk about virtue as Christ followers, as Christians, but that can almost at times, you know, virtue can feel like a juxtaposition against our performance and productivity in business. But as Dr. Cloud will explain, nothing could be further from the truth. And by that, I mean God's truth, His Word. Listen as Henry unpacks the meaning of virtue as a force that is defined through productivity, results, and God-honoring relationships within the context of business leadership.
The only way we know we have issues is just check and see if you have a belly button. If you got a belly button, you got issues, because that means you came from a dysfunctional family. It's true. It's called the family of Adam. It's the human race. And so all of us in this path, no matter what you lead or what you do in life, all of us are in this path. The Bible calls it sanctification. Research calls it a bunch of other stuff. But in basically, what I think it is basically, is the restoration of character. And what I mean by character, and I'll further define this in a moment, but your character is more than morals and ethics. Morals and ethics are basically the foundational slab underneath the building of a character. For example, lying, cheating, and stealing, we talk about, you know, somebody who's got good character, they have integrity, for example, we use that word. You'll hear definitions like, well, they're the same in private, they are in public. That doesn't get it. That's foundational, but all that is duplicity. That's not integrity. Integrity actually means to be integrated or to be whole. An integer is a whole number. So when we're talking about integrity, what we're talking about in leadership and in life, or a father or a mother, what we're talking about is the integration of the makeup of what a human is supposed to be like. Now, how many of you have had the experience where you've had leaders that you've worked for or worked with that had great integrity in terms of their morals and ethics? They wouldn't lie, cheat, or steal. But given the chance to work with them again, you would pass. Everybody know that person? What is that? I think I shared with you in Washington, I got a call from the president of a big Christian organization one time where he said, I want to do some leadership development with my executive team, global entity. I flew up there, back there, across there. It's on the other coast. We sat down, and one of the things I said to him is what I said to you yesterday. I said, you know, most of the time I'm in business settings. This is a Christian organization, so we can talk about the spiritual parts of this. I love doing that. And he looks at me and he goes, no. I said, what? He said, the men on my executive team, these are the godliest men I know. We don't need spiritual development. We need leadership development. And I said, well, they're kind of related, don't you think? And he said, no, these are godly men. And, you know, you got that kind of steeple voice that you hear in the Christian world. So, these are godly men. And I've walked with them for four, you know, and these are godly men. I said, all right, so we won't do the spiritual. But what are your leadership struggles? He said, well, I just can't get them to work together. He said, they each have their own department. They guard their budgets and their people and their resources. And I need them to get transcendent, to get above that. And we got a greater purpose here. And I just can't get them to keep protecting just their theirs. And they silo and they, you know, they'll have meetings after the meeting. And I said, so these are the godly men? He said, oh, these are God. I said, well, you know, my Bible tells me that love doesn't seek its own. And I pulled out 2 Peter 1. And there's a list of character traits there where it says that if you're going to be fruitful, which is what leadership is all about, if you're going to be fruitful, that these aspects of your makeup have got to be present and increasing. And it actually begins early in the beginning. It says moral excellence. So if you don't lie, cheat, or steal, that's really important. But when my daughters were 5 years old, they knew not to lie, cheat, or steal. They weren't ready to lead an organization. There's more to it than that. So we're going to hop into the anatomy of integrity and relate it to leadership. And what I'd like to start with is a metaphor that, I don't know why this hit me one day. Oh, I know why it hit me. Early on when I was looking, my first job was in a leadership consulting firm as a graduate student. I went knocking on doors and I finished my program and I was looking for a job as a psychologist and I got hired by a leadership consulting firm. Because they wanted somebody to work with leaders that had issues. And so literally from day one, my career has been spent, this is from the early 80s, sitting there listening to high performers. I was sort of like a leader shrink. And what I learned early on, I fell in love with leadership. I did my doctoral dissertation in leadership personality as a clinician. And what I learned is this. That we get this discipline of leadership, and people get leadership development in companies all the time, and you know you're everybody knows that you everybody hits a problem. You're great at finance, or you're great at marketing, or you're great at sales, or you're great at some discipline, and you're trained for that, and then you get good at it, and all of a sudden. You get elevated, and all of a sudden you find yourself, you have two different jobs. You've got finance, and now you got people. And you got to lead them. Or you got marketing, and now you got people. Or you got ops, and now you got people. One of those jobs you were trained for. The other one, you weren't. And so that's why leadership development is so important and all these great topics, and you must study them. You must learn them. Strategy and execution and vision and being a change agent, building critical mass, knowing the science of doing all of that. But here's what I found early on, that there is this place, once you learn all this stuff, you come out here and you find out you're the one that's got to do it. And so it gets worse than that. Not only do you have to do it, you got to do it with other wackos besides you. And this leadership thing is intensely interpersonal because nobody ever accomplished anything on their own. So now, here's what I would hear early on, and I've come to believe this even more over the years, and it's what the research shows, that we get out there to do this in this really weird place called reality. And you start to cast vision, but then you get up there to cast vision and you're talking to your board or your investors or whatever, and then there's this little voice in your head that just, you hear this little sentence, why are they going to believe me? Why are they going to, who am I? Or you hit a bad quarter and the numbers go down and you begin to feel, I knew I would lose. I'll never overcome this. Or you've got a particular difficult investor or a chairman or somebody on your team or a difficult direct report, and you go into a meeting and that chairman of the board or that board member's there and he gets into an interaction and you walk out and you go, why can I think well all the time except when I'm in a room with him or her? What happens to me? You become less than who you are. So you go back to the leadership material and you look at all this and you say, okay, this is the way I'm supposed to cast vision, or this is the way I'm supposed to have a difficult conversation or confront somebody or whatever it is, or prune or have a necessary ending or start anew and launch out. And then our issues get in the way, or they interplay with other issues. So the leadership stuff didn't do it for me, so what do I do? Well, I'll go to therapy. So I go over here and I go into personal growth. And I go to the personal growth side. And I go see my shrink. And talk about leadership struggle. This board member, or this, the market's going down, and or how do I? And the shrink goes, I can see you're struggling in your job. Seems painful. Well, that's all our time for today. Oh, great. So what in my recovery or my, you know, what, that's not getting it either. So here's what I found, that we need a place called the middle space. And the middle space is what I define as where what you have to do as a leader and the makeup of who you are come together as a person. Because you are the tool. You are his workmanship created in Christ Jesus for good works that have been laid down beforehand so that you might walk in them. See, he is building you, Ephesians 2 says, to be able to actually pull that off. So I got deep into the literature decades ago about this stuff, and I started with the word character. Now, here's what's interesting if you're a Bibleologue. Go try to find the word character in the Bible. We use it all the time. It's basically not there. It occurs about 5 to 6 or 7 times, depending on the translation that you're using. But when we find it, if you go to the Greek, got any Greek scholars in here? What is the word, the actual word in the Bible, that's translated character? Anybody know? See, I'm not pointing any fingers. I was like, we don't. It's character, right? You know what it means? It means experience. Our makeup comes from what we have experienced in life, A, and B, how we have experienced those experiences, how we, as Pastor said, respond to those experiences, and see what new experiences we have that become part of that mix. That's called healing. But that's who we are. I had a brother-in-law who's a Navy SEAL, and Mark was amazing. I think I shared a little bit about him the last time I was with you, and Mark, what'd you guys do in Afghanistan? Well, I jumped out of a plane at 40,000 feet and hit the cold ocean, went down, took a nap at the bottom for a little while, because we had been up for 4 days. And then we, 6 of us, took down this ship and turned it around, took it to the UN holding, and then we had breakfast, you know. Those guys don't get that kind of makeup by multivitamins. They get it through development. They get it through experience. I jumped out of a plane one time, and it was nothing like Mark. I remember, and I pulled my own chute. It wasn't tandem, wasn't tied to an instructor. That's illegal now, but my wife made me do it because we were engaged, and just your fiance, she wants to jump out of a plane. What are you going to say? No. If you were married, I'd tell her to go jump out herself. But we were engaged. I mean, I'm not going to wuss out, right? So I jump out, and all of a sudden, it's 13,000 feet above the oxygen level. Stick your head out of a window at 120 miles an hour. That's what it's like. And I remember I just freaked for a while. You're falling like 7,500 feet before you're supposed to pull the chute. And about that time, I went, oh, yeah, what am I doing? And I mean, I was freaked. Mark didn't do that because his makeup was molded by his development. So I start researching this word character. And the closest thing I can find to it in the Bible is the Hebrew word of virtue. And I started diving deep into that. And here's what it said. The etymology of that term, virtue, it means a person that's able to bring the goods. They bring good things. But it actually means this. It means a force. Now, you talked about legacy. When we talk about a legacy, what we're talking about is we move through life and you are a force as a leader. You move through a meeting and you are a force. We have the energy that we're given when we're born. The energy. That's all you got. Everybody's born. You come into the world. What do you have? You have energy and time. The energy of your heart, mind, soul, and strength to be invested in time. And as you take that energy and you move it through time, you're a force. And we just saw a hurricane with its force. And that force leaves always a wake. So I started talking about this wake thing. This is a boat. A boat leaves a wake on two sides. This got really interesting to me when you look at a wake and the two sides that a wake has. And you can tell a lot about this boat by the wake it leaves. If you stand on a boat and you stand on the aft end and it's headed that way, the captain sometimes will put it on autopilot and walk around and look at the wake and know everything's okay. Because knows the boat's okay because the wake is even, hadn't lost his heading. If it's too steep, he knows that his speed is wrong. He's got too much drag. He's burning through resources. If it's too shallow, he's going too fast. He's going to hit a weather or something. But you can tell by the wake. So here's what the research shows about you and me and everybody else. As we move through a meeting, as we move through a company, as we move through a relationship, as we move through an interaction, we leave a wake behind us. And that wake is what leaders are judged on. And you go to the research, and here's what was fascinating to me. If you do a factor analysis of all of the research that's ever been done on leadership, and a factor analysis is when you take 100 things and you start to correlate them and realize, well, they're saying these two things, but really that's one thing, right? So if you say, how tall are you, is one question, and then you have another question of, what's the length of your extension when you lie down on the floor? It's really the same thing. If you take all the leadership literature and you boil it down, and you continue to boil it down, and you continue to correlate, it gets down to two factors. And any leadership book you'll ever read, which are good because we need to unpack these factors, but it's going to be talking about one of two things. Your wake as a leader, you will be judged by the results. Leaders are in leadership, as the Bible says, to have fruit. Okay, it matters. You'll ask you were here when Mary was the CEO or when Joe was, what was it like? And you'll hear them talk about the way, oh, it was awesome. We grew at whatever percentage. We captured new markets. We innovated new stuff. We just, the results in that time, it was amazing. Well, what would you like to work for? The other side of the wake, the relationships, the morale, the culture. What happens to me when I work here? As a person, do I get better? Oh, Mary, Joe, oh, they were amazing. Not only did we kill it, but it was such a thriving place to work. She was tough, but I knew she was always for me. She wanted me to be better. So you hear leaders talked about in terms of this wake. In fact, when I've got a program called Leadership University, it's a digital process to take companies through and leaders through. And one of the early modules is about the wake. And I don't want people's opinion on themselves. I want the people in the wake's opinion on themselves, on those people. So one of the things they have to do is after they learn that as a leader, you leave a wake, one of the assignments is there is you have to go pick somebody above you, a peer, and someone below you, and sit down and take them to coffee and say, ask them one question. Look, I'm learning about this leadership thing. It's called the wake. We leave a wake behind us, and it's results and relationships. So all I'm going to do is listen. I'm not going to negate or be happy or sad. I just really want you to tell me the truth. What's it like to be in my wake? What's it like to be on the other side of me? What am I doing that helps you get better results or helps us get better results? Am I delivering on what you depend on me for my role to do? And what's it like to work with me? See, now we're beginning to look at our wake. And so what I got interested in very early on, and I wrote a book about this called Integrity, was what does integrity really mean in terms of what does the makeup of a leader look like? In terms of leaving a good wake. Now, it's interesting because you look at the makeup of a boat or an airplane, and they talk about the word character. You know, if you're a general in the Air Force and you go down to Boeing and say, I need you to build me a new plane, what's the first thing the engineer says to the general? In fact, I asked that question one day, and a lady in the audience, literally, she raises her hand. I said, yes, ma'am. She said, well, I am an engineer at Boeing. I said, oh, God. And what do you say to the general? And she got the right answer. Can you imagine that? She said, well, we ask him, what are you going to do with it? Because you're going to fly cargo from Chicago to Raleigh. That plane can be made out of, this is a mixed metaphor, I understand that. This is a plane now. I've switched on you. It can be made of a certain character of material, certain composite. It can be glued together in certain ways. The metal can, you know, but if you tell me you're going to fly from 0 to 1,000 Mach in 3 seconds, which don't say that at the Air Force Academy either. There is no 1,000 Mach. I did that one day. They looked at me like, who hired this guy? And it's going to do rolls and dogfights. She said, it's got to be made out of different stuff. The character, it's got to be glued together differently. The material's got to be different. And you go through the Bible and you see this over and over and over. That through this oven of experience, that God is making the plane, that's you, the boat, that's you, making it stronger. Because here's how I want to define character this morning. Character equals the demand, the ability to meet the demands of reality. It's more than morals and ethics, even though it includes those. Like I said to that leader, I know these godly men have this, but 2 Peter 1, I read down the list of the traits, and it says one of them is knowledge. How much leadership development have you done with them? Other than their Bible study. I'm talking about knowledge. The next one says mutual affection. I don't hear a lot of mutual affection around this table. Because here's what happens. If that boat, if our character doesn't have well-rounded makeup, then we're a force that leaves really spotty wakes behind us. When we start to integrate what the Bible calls become mature, solid food is for the mature, which is a very similar word. It means complete. It means ripe. It means whole. It doesn't mean perfect, but it means everything that God put in you as an image bearer is present.
I love how Henry brings it back to God's divine impartation of His image within us. As we read in 2 Peter 1:3, by His divine power, the Lord has given us everything we need for life and godliness through the knowledge of the One who called us by His own honor and glory. We'll complete this message from Dr. Cloud on our next podcast episode. And as we look forward to this year's international conference in September, it's the biblical mindset that Henry's describing that is the context of our conference theme of advancing the gospel through business. In fact, it's the core foundational worldview and vision of FCCI, transforming the world through Christ, one company leader at a time. You can learn more about upcoming regional events, leadership groups, and the international conference at fcci.org. Thanks for listening, and may God encourage your journey as you lead a company for Christ.